Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and each week at this time, I have a conversation with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, the former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. And Steve, we've got lots to talk about today, but I do want to ask you about the redistricting lawsuit. We were discussing that last week as the case was being heard.
I sat in the courtroom. It was about 8 hours, 9 hours on day one. Day two was even longer. We started at 8:30, finished at 6 o'clock at night. And so just almost 12 full hours there in the courtroom. Judge Van Solen, I think, ran a very good trial, very fair and balanced trial. I think that at the end of the day, the Democrats were really scrambling to try to explain away Mimi Stewart's tweet. Now, in that tweet, we got that through discovery. Your lawyers have a chance to ask people on the other side if they have any relevant information. And I think that one of the agencies that we asked turned this tweet over to us. But in that tweet, Mimi Stewart, and again, she is the president pro tem of the Senate, so a very powerful position. She controls the floor operations for the Senate. And declares that the people's map, referring to the commission, so the people's map was 51.8%. That's not enough for a midterm election. So we adjusted some edges, scooped up more of Albuquerque, and now we're at 53%. And that's according to Mimi Stewart. That just absolutely tells you that they were setting out to gerrymander. And they, in fact, did that. Our team proved that very strongly. And so just the Friday before the trial, the Supreme Court, one of the justices came out with additional guidance saying that they had to prove that the district is now entrenched. In other words, it's as if they were acknowledging that gerrymandering did occur, but you had to prove it was entrenched. I think one of the more telling times was when Brian Sandoroff, he's a friend of mine. He's somebody I've known since I was in the state legislature in the late 90s. But Brian Sandoroff testified that 53% was not entrenched, that 54% was entrenched. It's as if there's a door that suddenly slams shut at 54% that doesn't even sort of even come close to closing at 53%. And of course, we all know that politics are not like that. Your vote tends to thin out as circumstances change or as the voting pattern changes. And so 53% is not greatly different from 54%. And I believe that that district is definitely entrenched. But when Mr. Sandoroff was visiting about it in front of the court, he was testifying. He said that CD2, when I served, was a toss-up, pointing out that I won the district. But as soon as I didn't run, twice when I didn't run, that the seat was lost. Then he pointed out that Yvette won it back and then lost it again in the new deal. And he was saying that the old district was a toss-up, and he said that's good for representation. I agreed with him that it's good for representation, but what he didn't explain was, if it was a toss-up before, how is it still a toss-up when you move the Democrat Performance Index, the DPI, you move it by 18 points towards the Democrats? How is it still a toss-up if it was a toss-up before? And so we never got that explanation, and I'm hoping that the Supreme Court, if it goes to them, will actually think about that. On the Democrat side, their star witness besides Mr. Sandoroff was Dr. Joey Chen. He is out of the University of Michigan. He had a randomly generated 1,000 maps in his study. And the idea was to prove that all 1,000 maps look very similar to the one that the legislature did draw. But under pressure, he testified that he was instructed that no more than 60% of the state's oil wells could go in one district, not the oil and gas wells, because that would have included Farmington, and Farmington makes mostly gas wells, not oil wells. And so what they were doing is they were establishing come before he did his study. He was supposed to be an independent expert witness that looks at this thing in a nonpartisan fashion, and his lawyers instructed him to draw those maps with that no more than 60% of the wells in any one district. What that did was in every single one of his maps, it split up Lee and Eddy County. They were in different districts, and also it divided Lee in half. It divided Eddy between two districts, Chavis between three districts. In the cross-examination, he was asked if he had ever been instructed to divide an industry, maybe oranges in Florida. He'd worked on a Florida case, and he said, no, he didn't divide oranges, and no, he didn't divide textile mills, and no, he didn't divide any other industry. And so the conclusion was that they're simply trying to rig the outcome not only of the gerrymandered district, but of the expert witnesses' findings At some point, he became defensive, and he wouldn't actually declare that dividing the district based on oil wells was bad policy. He simply said, I did what I was told. I did what I was told. I did what I was told. Well, that's a good loyal servant, but the truth is that New Mexico has been badly served by this redistricting map drawn by the legislature and signed by Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. And I think that anyone could see that they're trying to entrench the Democrats in all three districts. The danger is that you end up with no Republican voice to defend oil and gas. I can tell you that multiple times we stopped things that would have hurt jobs in New Mexico. We stopped policies from Congress, and that's what the voice is for. But with Democrats there, they will not speak on behalf of oil and gas. Number one, it's politically not going to be acceptable to their leadership. And number two, they don't know the oil and gas industry. So New Mexico jobs are going to be hurt by this redistricting map that was put in by the legislature if the courts don't change it. And so, again, the closing arguments, the Democrats, I thought their lawyers were really struggling. Their testimony was that Mimi Stewart was just one of 112, that she wasn't anything different than the other 112 and by herself couldn't have done anything, and no one else shared her opinion. That's total falsehood, because as the president pro tem of the Senate, she would be the one representing the Senate voice. The House would have been represented by the Speaker of the House, then the governor would be in there. They didn't invite any Republicans in at all, and so you just are left with the conclusion that it was a slam dunk from their side, intending, like Mimi Stewart said in her tweet, to ensure the election by increasing it from 51.8% under the commission to the 53% that they were able to get by taking Democrat votes out of both the other districts. So we'll see where the judge goes, but again, our team was powerful in its presentation. I was proud of them all the way through.
Let's suppose that the judge finds in favor of your side. What happens then? Does the district go back to the way it was, or does it go back to the legislature to do over again?
Well, that's the judge's decision, but it will not go back the way it was before. That's a foregone conclusion. Most likely, the judge would ask the legislature to convene and redraw the maps and make them fairer. Now, what means fairer? Is that 2%, 5%, 10%, or maybe the full 18%? So you can take your guess about where that might be. General consensus is anywhere between 3 and 5%. More Republicans would, the judge would probably accept that. If he finds that the solutions that he's looking for don't happen, the judge has the option to have specialists draw the maps for him. And in fact, that's happened a couple of times in the past redistricting cases. So it's a lot hanging in the balance here. I spoke with Yvette Harrell, who represented the district in Congress for that 2 years. And so I talked to her just this last week at that pig roast in Hobbs. And her statement was that she wasn't waiting for the case to be decided. She was out campaigning in the current district, and if it changes, fine. But she's not worried at all, meaning that if it stays the same as it was when she was defeated 2 years ago, she's going to win that race, even in that district. Of course, the fairest thing would be if they get a few more Republican votes into that district, satisfy the judge, take away the extreme gerrymandering that took place. Our lawyers, the two lawyers from New York, were the ones who won the New York case in front of the five Democrat state Supreme Court justices in New York, but they also won the Maryland case. Both of those were fighting Democrat maps, which were egregiously gerrymandered, but that their comment was that none were as bad as New Mexico.
The last poll that I saw shows, even with the gerrymandered district, that Yvette Harrell was leading by 1%, which is a statistical tie, but Gabe Vasquez did announce he's going to run again. So it looks like we'll have a rematch of 2 years ago.
Yeah, we'll have a rematch, but keep in mind that 1% difference, I think there's about 28% that are undecided, and it's way too early yet for people to be paying attention. So that was an argument that the Democrat lawyers used in court, was that, look, it's already a toss-up this year. This is a toss-up district. Now, the nation is poisoned against the Biden administration. Inflation is eating away people's pocketbooks. The gun or governor has disenchanted a lot of Democrat voters. And so the fact that Yvette is running even right now, that's this year, 2 years from now. If those situations don't exist, then that one-point difference is going to be hard to achieve. 53% is a very hard district to win. Derek, before we get out of this section, I want to invite people to listen in on the next one. We've got an interview with Lottie's up in the Chaco Canyon area. Remember, that's where Deb Holland put the restriction on any drilling that was to take place there. The Lottie's are losing total. The aggregate among them is probably, I think, $2 or $3 million a year. Well, that's money that they would normally spend. Each Lottie gets a certain amount of that money, and they would spend it. They'd drive into Gallup or Grants, and they would spend their money there. But when Deb Holland and the Biden administration take away that source of funding, that source of income for Native Americans, it, number one, makes the tribes poorer as a whole, but it also makes the individuals less prosperous. Stay and listen to that conversation. I think you'll find it fascinating. Again, the Chaco Canyon allottees in the next section.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Thanks for staying with us on Inside New Mexico. Our federal government has decided to protect Chaco Canyon, but who are they actually protecting it from? On the phone with me, I have Delora Jesus. Tell us about your group.
Our group was founded in the early 80s, and it had to be established because back then, Allottees didn't have a voice, and we were encountering a lot of issues that we're dealing with today. And we need to let everyone know that we have our right as an Allottee to speak for ourselves and to fight for our rights, for our land, and, of course, advocate for our resources that are on our land. So basically, that's what the organization is to Shishikea Association. Talking about our land.
Let's explain that in a little more detail. So the federal government has designated an area around Chaco Canyon where there can be no drilling for oil. And the problem with that is, of course, that there's a lot of people who have land around Chaco Canyon who made money, who made their living, their survival off of that land as an allottee, as you say. And you were, apparently were not considered in this decision. Is that correct?
Yes. We really never had consultation, and that's a must, with the trust and responsibility. And we just had previous presidents of the Navajo Nation say that, you know, they're speaking for us, but there was really no communication at all. So we find all this out after the fact.
Did you hear from our Interior Secretary, Deb Holland? Did she tell you, well, this is going to happen and you're going to lose your allotment?
No, she didn't. When this all started way back in 20, I can't even remember what date, but yes, we've been trying to get a meeting with her. We've invited her to meet with the Navajo Lottees within the area, Nyeezi, and we even advocated. We went to Washington, D.C. to advocate for our resources and what the issues were. And she never met with us.
So people are going to say, well, don't you care about Chaco Canyon? Are you not concerned about the ecology of the area?
Yes, we've stated that to that several times. Of course, we have respect for the area. We're Native Americans. We're Navajo, and all Natives respect water and the surfaces of the land and all. But we've never really said that we weren't, you know. We've always left the park away because they tell us that, you know, it's sacred. So if it's sacred, you got to know where your boundaries are. And, you know, we just have to leave the sacred ground alone.
Can there be a happy medium then? Can there be drilling safely done and still protect the sacred grounds?
Yes, of course. The companies never get to put in their input, but with the new technology today, it is really advanced, and it's not just like the vertical wells anymore. It's horizontal wells now, in the past, they used to do vertical wells, and that would have pumps everywhere. But now it's just like one place where they'll put the well pads at. And we have our native young people that advance in all this. They work in the field, and it's all different. And then we have all the restrictions on all the that they have to obtain and do within the state. So it's really up there with the technology, and they even do recycling with the water. It's not like they use tons and tons. And then there's the aquifer water is protected. So it just seems like we're getting all these wrong stories or news outlet about that they're not doing their job well at all. And there's nothing, there's no oil within the boundaries of Chaco. It's safe within maybe 6 miles. Nobody really hasn't asked us questions about it. It's being protected. And then the thing about this, too, is that there's always been drilling within Chaco, way back early 60s, 70s, and that the park has not even encountered any kind of damage or anything, just maybe Mother Nature with the wind, the rain, and that's about it.
Well, that would happen whether you're drilling or not.
Yes. And that's what I mean. And they never asked us this question. It's been protected all these years from generation to generation. And then with our culture and our tradition, we're not supposed to go down there. The park's been doing okay. And it's just all misinformation. They're not here on our side. And somewhere down the line, we've always, from my great-grandpa to my grandpas, that they've always depended on their resources that came out of our allotments.
Yeah, how about our representatives in Congress, Stansberry and Ledger Fernandez? Have you been able to talk with them about this?
Well, we really never had a conversation with Melanie Stansberry. And then we did do a meeting with Teresa Fernandez, but that was in 2021, I believe. And it was just a teleconference call. And there wasn't really not a whole lot of allottees on that phone call or that teleconference. And at the beginning of the call, we told her that we didn't want her to use that teleconference call as a consultation. But we believe she did. She's saying that she's spoken to the allottees about the issues that we are facing. And that's about it. And then all the others, I was still trying to speak with Martin Heinrich. When this whole thing started, I still haven't met with him or our issues. And then the funny thing about all this, too, is that Tom Udall, I met with him with the former oil company back in 2015 or 2016. And he supported the Basin Gallup Mancos-Shell. We met with him and he said that the state was going to get revenue and the allottees, too. So I just didn't understand why he turned around and just started saying that we needed to protect Chaco. But then again, he really gave us the green light when we met with him in Farmington, New Mexico at the airport.
Dolores, thank you so much for joining us today on Inside New Mexico.
Thank you for having me.
Alice Benally is also an allottee in the Chaco Canyon area. Tell us how this new rule about Chaco Canyon and drilling oil is affecting you and your family.
To me, it's like the wool was pulled over our eyes really without notice. As family, as extended relatives in the area, I believe that we should have been informed, given more information before this was all done. It's going to hurt our family. Well, it's hurting many families, not only mine, but many families as it is. I mean, the drilling being stopped has caused unemployment among families. The breadwinners, they have children, they have bills, they have food, they have shelter to pay for. Just how are these people going to do it? And what is the government going to do to help them? Oil and gas has been our family and extended family sustenance for many years. It's provided in many ways our homes, our vehicles, food on the table, clothing, shoes. It's done a lot for us. It's paid our bills. To us, the place is sacred, and it's also taboo for our people, the Diné, to be down there, taking, destroying. We don't do that. I don't know why on earth people would think that's what our intention is. And oil and gas is not right there in Chaco Canyon. It's not even close to the canyon. To me, it seems like Deb Haaland is singling out the Navajo people that live in the area. For years on end, they have home site leases there. They graze there now. It seems like she's saying that they're not worthy of living there because they're going to destroy the area. And that's not true.
Alice, I appreciate getting your insight on this, and I appreciate your time on Inside New Mexico today.
Thank you very much.
The governor's violation of our Second Amendment rights in New Mexico has caused the city of Eunice to take action. Steve Pierce and I will talk about that and more right after this on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico as I continue my conversation with the chairman of the Republican Party, Steve Pierce. And Steve, I see the city of Eunice is standing up to the governor's violation of the Second Amendment. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, they passed a resolution to send a message to the governor that the constitutional right of its residents to bear arms will not be infringed. The resolution basically says that the Eunice City Council hereby declares its intent to support and defend the constitutional right of its citizens, including the right to keep and bear arms for security and defense, for lawful hunting and recreational use, and for other lawful purposes, and to adamantly oppose unconstitutional restrictions on such rights, the resolution reads. So that's what's necessary. People have to start standing up for the rights, and they can't wait for someone else to do it. So the Eunice City Council, full of courage and steadfast intent to protect their citizens' resolution. The Epoch Times, if you don't read that, I would recommend that you go online and get a subscription, or I take the paper version. I like to make comments and margins and things. But there is a group of meteorologists, the scientists, who 1,609 of them have signed a what they call as the Global Climate Intelligence Group World Climate Declaration. And in that, they say that climate science should be less political, while climate policies should be more scientific. And they're very critical of the climate rhetoric that is going on, saying that many times what they're saying from the side that says that it's the greatest threat that we face, they're just saying that's overhyped, that of course we all want to keep the planet clean, we want to keep our water clean, our air clean, but they are saying that there is no climate emergency. So I would draw people to that Epoch Times article. That's in the October 3rd, 2023 issue of the Epoch Times. So go online, subscribe, and take a look at that. The Epoch Times is the fastest growing independent news agency in the country. It actually acts like journalism. They're critical of both sides when they should be. I would draw you to it. Also, take a listen as Tim Keithley used to be my district director when I served in Congress, but he's now the chair of the Lincoln County Republican Party, and he's talking about their Lincoln Day coming up October 21st there in Ruidoso for that Lincoln Day dinner. So listen as he explains who their speaker is and what it means.
Tim, how you doing?
Good, Derek. Great to talk to you again.
Well, you too. And we go back a long way, but I want to get you on for just a few minutes here to tell our listeners about a big event that you're having in Lincoln County.
Well, everyone knows that the best Lincoln-Reagan dinner is in Lincoln County, New Mexico. We try to really put on a great event every year, and this year's no exception. So we want to invite everyone statewide to come to our Lincoln-Reagan dinner that's going to take place at Alto Lakes Country Club on Saturday evening, October the 21st. And we have a very special keynote speaker this year, Derek. We have the Fox contributor, author, journalist, producer, Raymond Arroyo is coming to our event, and we're very excited.
So will he be signing books?
Yeah, he has a new book. It's a children's book. It's called The Mischievous Tad Lincoln, which is very appropriate for a Lincoln-Reagan dinner.
Yeah.
He's going to tell the story of Abe's son, and that seems like it's just the perfect topic for a Lincoln-Reagan dinner. And all of the proceeds here for this event will help us elect Republicans in both local, county, and statewide races. So we just invite everyone to come and hear Raymond. He's very popular. You might know Raymond from his appearances on the Laura Ingraham Show. He does Seen and Unseen and other really very funny and humorous segments on Fox News. And so here's a real opportunity for you to see one of the Fox stars coming to New Mexico and Raymond Arroyo.
How do folks who are listening and want to come get tickets?
It's real easy, Derek. All you'd have to do is go to our website. It's rplcnm.org. That's Republican Party, Lincoln County, New Mexico, .org, rplcnm.org, and you can purchase a ticket online, or you can telephone. Our hotline is 575-315-4678.
I know the answer to this, but for our listeners, if you're not a Republican, obviously, you're still welcome to come, right?
Well, certainly. We invite anyone and everyone to come hear Raymond Arroyo. He's going to be just a very entertaining speaker, and it should be a fun night and a really nice evening menu. We have beef medallions on the main course, and everyone knows that the excellent food that they have at Alto Lakes Country Club. So it should be just a really spectacular night. And if you come, you're hopefully going to get an autographed book signed by Raymond Arroyo for his new book about Ted Lincoln.
Tim Keithley, give us that website one more time.
Be happy to. It's rplcnm.org or telephone 575-315-4678. And thanks, Derek, for all that you do.
Thanks, Tim. If you've been listening to our program and would like to find out more information on the Republican Party of New Mexico, check out the website at newmexico.gop. The party has a Facebook page and a Twitter account, now X account. The handle is at newmexicogop. If you would like to speak to someone in person, you may call party headquarters in Albuquerque at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. We look forward to meeting with you again next week at this time on Inside New Mexico.